Welcome to Wizard Team, a Black Magical podcast for Black Magical Stories. Hi everyone, it's Robin and Portia embarking on a journey through the many fantasy stories written by and about Black people. Today we're really excited to be joined by Annalee Sabrana, debut author of Lore of the Wild. Hi Annalee.
Hi Annalee.
Hello.
Can you briefly tell the audience what Lore of the Wild is about?
Yes, I can. Lore of the Wild is a new adult fantasy, romantasy, about a human woman who is tasked by the Fae to catalog an enchanted library. The library is cursed, so she's the only one who can enter the doors, and she accepts this dangerous task to help her village, which is a human village. In this world, the humans are the outliers and the Fae rule, and she makes this deal to help her village, but what the Fae don't know is she's not just doing it to help them, she is seeking magic of her own.
Love it.
Thank you for that. The intrigue alone from that is great. And it's like, having read the book summarizes like what you can kind of get from that. Speaking of like thinking of it, conceiving it, how did you this idea for the story first come to being in your brain, and what inspirations did you like put into your writing? Because I know like you're talking about this as a story that like is like a series, so how did that all work out and come together?
Well, as a writer, I tend to do a lot of daydreaming, and so I was just sitting there zoning out as I do. And I pictured a human woman entering an enchanted library. It was a library that hadn't been seen in 1,000 years. I didn't know why. I didn't know what was the reason. Why was she there? I could just see her like perusing the aisles, her hands kind of running over the books. And she was somebody who loved books. So she was like kind of giddy. That's kind of all I knew. So from there, I just explored it, you know, okay, what is the reason that nobody has been in this library for 1,000 years? What are the ways that it's enchanted? What makes her want to go in it? You know, what, and like, what were the circumstances that brought her there? And that is how Lore of the Wilds was started. I will say some of my motivations for making it a series is I'm a huge fantasy girly, and so I love series. I will say that originally, if you had asked me like 3 years ago, oh, what's your favorite length for a series? I would have said a trilogy. I used to love trilogies. Recently, I've noticed that, not really recently, but over the last few years, I tend to drop off them after the second book. Like, I have a hard time completing a series. I have like 50 million half-finished series where I've read the first two books, and then I never read the third or the fourth. And I realize it's because sometimes books kind of have like second book syndrome where they are just filler. Like, you know that the author is literally just writing this to fill a space, and the third book is going to be where all the important things happen. And I just, and this is my first series. This is, you know, my debut novel. And I didn't want that to happen with my series. And I knew that it would probably be a huge stressor on me. It would like maybe like give me too much anxiety where I just didn't do a good job or something. And so I just decided that I wanted to write a duology. So it's going to be two books, and by the end of book two, you will have all the answers, and there won't be any filler book. So
very lovely. But also I want to note that like because you're like, this first book is not that long. So it actually, like, I think that also helps, like, as a fantasy reader, that, like, you're not even, like, a lot of those books we're talking about, like, they're it's more than, like, 3 or 4 or 5 books. They're all quite large books. So it's, that makes it even more of a hurdle to get back into it. But, like, with this, even with just the size, if the next book in the series is this size or even, like, slightly larger, it won't be as daunting as those longer series are.
Yeah, and you can even do, like, a reread. Like, oh, I'm going to reread the book before I start book 2, and it's not going to take you 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it might, depending on how busy you are and how long you know, take you to read, and that's okay if it does take you that long, but for a lot of us, we could just, you know, read a book this length, like, pretty quickly. So I know, I think that a lot of the feedback I've gotten, though, has been like, I wanted more. I needed more. Like, why is this not, like, I remember one person literally told me, like, I wish that you had written one of those 800 word fantasy books, because I would have devoured every word if it had been 800 words. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
I will say this, as someone who just recently finished one of those 800 word fantasy books, that is only useful if you have something to say. So I completely agree with what you're saying. And I've always wondered too, like, I understand with, like, publishing and contracts and stuff like that, sometimes you're, like, contracted to do a trilogy or a duology or whatever. But I always wonder, when you come up with the story, is it like, this is like, these are at least, like, the big things that I want to hit, or these are, like, the major plot points that need to happen. Mm-hmm. And then you look at that and you're like, okay, it needs to be a trilogy or a duology will do it just fine.
I'm sure
I was literally in the middle of one of those 800 page books and was like, got to a point where there was a twist, but the twist just meant that the 300 pages I just read didn't matter. And I was like, you are taking my piss. Like, you are
that's rough. Killing me.
Yeah. And so I agree to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
If you get one of those 800 page fantasies where everything is great, you know, I would have liked more time in the library. But I also could just have, like, if you just want to make a blog on, like, your website of just, like, scenes from the library that you're like, this has nothing to do with the
story. Maybe I'll start a Patreon.
Yeah.
You're paying $10 for it.
Or you can be one of those authors that do the, like, in a half books, like, the 0.5 book or
that would be so fun.
I mean, there are now a few where they're, like, short stories from the world, which are, like, this has nothing to do with the overall plot of the book, but
that would be so fun to do one day, like, to come back and be like, here's a little novella with 15 scenes from the library or something. Oh, I would love to do that.
And I would love to read it. So the backstory of how humans come into this realm was in some ways reminiscent of, you know, African people being stolen away from their lands and then brought to the Americas or the Caribbean. Though it was more like mystery and mythology than actual, like, violence, just for the readers who haven't yet read it yet. It's not the, like, traumatizing, but there is something about the ways in which you are brought into this land and then kind of segmented and then made to feel othered through something that you didn't really have any control over. And so I'm wondering, like, in what ways did your experience as a Black person inform the way that you built out Duskmere, which is the human kind of portion of the world, and the people?
Well, I will say that as a Black woman living in, you know, the diaspora, I like, kind of live that experience that Laura lives, especially because, like, her their history was stolen from them. So she knows to an extent her history, but she doesn't know a lot, which is my story as well. And, you know, I'm navigating every day. My lived experience is navigating a country that was built without me in mind, especially as a woman and as a Black woman. And so I live in a world that wasn't meant for me. And Lore is a human who lives in a world that everybody has magic but the humans. So it's just part of their day-to-day reality. But the humans suffer because they don't have that. And so it's definitely, you know, I definitely was just able to pull from my own experience and write that bit of the book, that part of it.
Yeah, we can't imagine it any differently. I think I think we're all, part of the reason why the podcast is featured the way that we are with Black fantasy stories is actually seeing that level of thought being put into the narratives and how much that means to us, having grown up without that being something that we can easily pick up in the library, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And the question I'm bringing up next is about a bit more about that, specifically as Robin was mentioning earlier, having those fantasies centering Fae, how most of the time that has not featured a diverse cast of characters. And so why was it important that not only your human characters were racially diverse, but also your magical Fae characters?
I will say that I wanted to write a book where Black people could feel safe reading it. I wanted you to, I wanted my Black readers to be able to read it and not have to, worry about, you know what I mean, about what was coming. I didn't want the humans to, I wanted everybody to just be their own. It didn't matter what color of their skin. You know what I mean? It really didn't, because the story is about human versus Fae. You know what I mean? It's not about specifically being, Black or, Latinx or anything like that. So I wanted them to just be able, just to live in that world. And, you don't have to worry about it. You know that it just is. You know what I mean? And so when I created all of these characters, diversity was really important to me. And so the humans of Duskmere are, every color. The Fae are as well. Let's say the main cast are Black, but you do have Gray, who's Lore's bestie. He's white. And, some of the Fae that you come across are, they're not Black, but one thing that I will say is I hate whenever I'm reading a fantasy and basically everybody's white, the author's white, basically everyone's white. And then you get one Black character and you're okay, hey, I'm no longer having to do backflips to picture myself in this world or change all the characters to look like me just because I want to, because, hey, here's one. And they describe their, beautiful dark skin or whatever. And I'm so excited. And then three chapters later, they're so when did your people get here? Oh yeah, we were brought over here during this war from this. And we were, I'm the only person left or something. They always have to have some story that explains how they got there. They can't just live there. They can't just be from there. You know what I mean? It happens every time, and it is so frustrating. And that's something that I wanted to make sure that wouldn't happen to anybody reading my book. Whether they were, that was just important to me, is all.
You hit on one of my beefs with fantasy, which is for me, where it comes in is that with the white gaze, it's that you describe all the people of color, but you don't really describe the white people.
White people.
Right.
So it's
because
like
they're seen as the norm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, they'll be like, this new character walks in and he flips his hair. And they'll be like, and then another character walks in and they have black skin.
They're black. Like they're black. Capital black.
Black. They're so very black. But I haven't described single other person's skin at all in this entire book until
and also
now.
Like the black character's personality trait is black. Like what are they like? They're black. Oh.
Yeah, it is so jarring. It's jarring. It'll pull me out of the story. It'll like, it can make me feel like, it can make me put the book down. Like actually yeah. There was a book that I read. I mean, this was years ago and it's a very popular book. People are obsessed with it. But that happened where we're like 15 chapters in and this one new character is introduced and they literally like mention something about them smiling and like the brightness of their teeth against their black skin or something and this and that. And I'm like, okay, you did not do that for anybody else. I'm literally like, I was so taken out of the story and like that I just put it down and then I didn't pick it back up. I was so annoyed.
I understand that. One thing though that I did notice when I was reading it that made me, it's kind of the opposite of that where it was like they're black was all the references to hair and curls and like keeping up with your hair and curls. And there's a moment in which Laura's hair is not cooperating and she is, I'm not gonna say distraught, but she's distracted by it because it is like, yeah. You know, you're, when you need to get your hair done or when you need it to do what it needs to do, or if it doesn't feel good, it's distracting. So we recently celebrated what we call Black Magical History Month. And we, you know, have a couple of different like challenges or questions, things like that. Ooh. And so one of our questions that we ask people is to name like a staple in Black magical hair care. So if you had magic and you had like access to potions or spells, what would be a staple magical use of your hair care? And so I'm wondering for you, what would be a staple Black magical hair care for you?
Okay, I love this question. That is so fun. I'm going to say it's going to be a not away potion. And so I can take the potion. You know, you only need 3 drops. That's it. Doesn't matter how much hair you have or how little, 3 drops. And you apply it to your hair, every knot, gone. Ooh. Disappears. That's going to be mine.
I love that. That actually does like the wash day, cuts it in like half, maybe more than half.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Like, sometimes like depending on the length of my hair, it'll take me 45 minutes to detangle alone in the shower, 45 minutes. And could you imagine?
Yeah.
Could you imagine? Please.
Also the branding in that, because a lot of those times those knots are called fairy knots, so it goes well into like the whole brand you have going on here with like the fae and fairy knots.
I'm not thinking of like a whole system because mine has always been like a spell to do like the parting and like braiding or whatever. Oh, yeah. Like on its own, so I have my hands free and it's just like doing what it needs to do.
Could you imagine parts. Already parted?
Yeah, but if I have your like knot free and then the magic parting.
Yes.
And then do you know how much time?
I mean, at this point, though, could we just, like, snap our fingers and then our hair be done?
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just wanting, like, a cap or something you just put on, like, a head wrap. And then it just, whatever head wrap you put on is the style that it'll do. So it's like, this is my two-strand twist knot. This is my headdress that does, like, a blowout. This is another one that does.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
See, but I do like hair days. I mean, this may be because I'm like crazy introverted and I love the having the built-in excuse of like, sorry, I gotta wash my hair. I do like the ritual of it. So I would want to have some
But maybe it doesn't, maybe it takes a while to do it, but you just have a head wrap that does it for you. So it might take the time, but you just don't have to, you don't have to do all the things that'll do it for you.
Well, okay. I'm sure you guys have read Legendborn, right?
Yes.
You know that scene where Bree, you know, she kind of realizes she's been completely neglecting herself. And so as an act of self-care, she takes all the time she needs to do her hair and properly do it. So I know exactly what you mean, because it can be a form of self-love. You know what I mean? To make sure that your hair is properly cared for and that you're caring for yourself at the same time.
And it's like all you want. Yeah.
And that scene is so powerful to me.
Yeah. When you take your time, it can feel like luxurious. Like you're just like, yeah. Kind of, yeah. Like putting,
but like but still yourself. Having the magical, that for the parts that you hate, mm-hmm. or you're just not good at.
And for me, I am so Tinder-headed. Oh, it is literally a curse. I have been cursed. And so like detangling my hair is like, it kind of low-key sucks. Like,
yeah.
Because it's painful. It can be painful. And like up until I discovered the wet brush, it was horrible. You know, now things are so much smoother for me because the wet brush gets out most of them, and then I just have to get like the, you know, the knots. But like, and then like sometimes, and it is true with the parting, because that can be like, even though I brush out my hair and blow dry it, why is my hair still stuck together whenever you part it? You know, yeah. Why am I like, so it's a thing. Yeah.
That's a great answer though. Whenever we figure out magic, I'm gonna be like, knotless potion.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Thank you. That was so, that was such a fun question. That was so fun. I loved it.
Okay. Speaking of magic, throughout the book, we see different forms of magic show up in different places. How did you come up with a magic system overall?
Oh, okay. So the magic system was a labor of love. I originally had no magic system. It was a mess. Like, I didn't even quite know what was going on. And so it did actually take a lot of discipline that I didn't know that I had for me to sit down and figure it out. Which basically, it's kind of a mixture. And it depends on what species you are. Like, if you are a siren, then you are inherently born with the ability to control the tide a little bit. You know what I mean? That's just how you're just born with it. Like, you are one with the water, one with the ocean, and you can like kind of control it, like just a little, not like not anything crazy. You can't like, you know, make it high tide if you want it to be low tide, but you can do something. I don't know. And then if you're and then like the light fae versus the dark fae, they have different magic as well. Like the light fae, they kind of, you know, usually call it like alchemy. And the way that they're able to do magic is different than the dark fae, which is more like elemental for the most part. And then you always have your outliers as well. And then for lore, which I don't want to spoil anything, but that was my favorite thing to figure out, because I wanted her to be witchy. You know what I mean? Because she's human. So I wanted her magic to be spells and potions and ingredients and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I chose to do.
I love that. Can you give us any hints if we're gonna see any different kinds of magic in the next one?
Oh,
you don't have to, but can you? You don't have to.
Yes, you will.
Mm-hmm. Yay. Yeah.
It's already, I will say that I wrote the first draft and it's with my editor now. And I will say that the first draft is already 30,000 words longer than my first draft of Lord of the Wilds was. So that's exciting. So it's definitely going to be longer. Hopefully nobody comes at me and is like, I needed more. I'm trying really hard to avoid that.
I think there will always be people who need more, and that's okay. But that's just like, yeah. I think that's a good thing. A backhanded compliment of saying, I want to stay in your world for a little bit longer.
Right. Because yeah. if they're like, wow, these scenes didn't need to be there and this was way too long, that would like, actually, if they said that to my face, I would like, it would hurt my feelings. Yeah. So unless it was like my editor and I'm paying them to do that, then please tell me. Yes, absolutely. Do you know what I mean? Like, or my, you know, beta reader is like, yes, I need to know this. Like, that's yeah. what I needed. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be the author that I just read whose book was out and then you have someone like me on a walk with their dog listening to the audiobook being like, I'm on chapter 70 and I have more time to go.
You're like, why am I on chapter 70? Please tell me.
Why am I on chapter 70 and I don't have like epilogue? Like, right, you know.
Right, exactly.
Anyway. We spend a lot of time in the library at the start of the book. I love the library. I love the, like, I also loved hearing you talk about how just like the book creation started with just like this library idea. Can you tell us about a part of the library, or like a book in the library that you maybe came up with, but it just didn't end up needing to be in the story, or it just was like something that you ended up having to cut, but you still thought was cool?
Well, I will say that like originally, but I think it was probably my first draft, maybe. I had this one book that was like kind of ridiculous in that it had a huge personality and it like wanted to be read so bad that like Laura was forced to pick it up. But I didn't think that I executed it well enough. I thought it was kind of maybe childish. I don't know. So I ended up taking it out. But yeah, I did have that, which I thought was cool.
I love that. That reminds me of like, obviously I'm obsessed with my dog. You can tell that by like 2 seconds, but like the idea of like when they want attention and the ways they go about like forcing you to pay attention to them, even if you're obviously busy or
right,
if
yeah.
you are like, I have, you know, in Laura's case, I have things to do and I have scary people making sure that I am doing it. And then the book is like, read me anyway.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally like, it's the same thing where my cat will come and just like rub her head on the corner of my book that I'm holding. So, yep.
The library in Small Animals, that brought to mind the fox. And I just want to thank you for including the fox in the story the way you did. I love foxes. And the way that the library plus fox was just like something that I did not expect, but like loved it so much. So that was like a combination that came together some way.
Does he have a name? Will we learn it?
Want it. Like, please do not spoil anything about the fox besides like, we're getting more fox, right? Like there's more to the fox yeah. than just like lies on the surface, yeah. right?
Yes.
Yeah. I have a whole theory about the fox. I'll let you know.
Portia. Oh, well now I don't feel like I should say anything. Cause now I'm scared. That
no, talk, no, no,
say,
no,
say. Like,
well, cause I'm like, I don't know. I'm actually kind of like trying to think like, what did I write about her that was in the first book, but not in the, you know, and I'm like, now I'm trying to think, like, well, let me make sure that wasn't in the sequel that I wrote it.
What we left off from the fox was that the fox came to help and, mm-hmm. like, scurried away, right? So,
well, then yeah. it turned into a moth bug thing mm-hmm. and hung mm-hmm. out on her.
Yeah, she's a moth.
Mm-hmm. She's a moth
right now. So she's a shapeshifter. And I love her so much.
I enjoyed how that was interwoven within the story without, like, a lot of explanation. And like Laura just kind of like vibes, like goes with it. Like it's just like, okay, all right. So back into like the first act of the story, because we're trying so hard not to spoil this book for everyone. In that first act of the story, Laura receives information that changes her understanding of the deal that she has struck with the Lord of the Castle through an unlikely source. Mm-hmm. This and other revelations help her to see that many things in the Fey world are more dangerous than they seem. which I feel like that's kind of like part and parcel of the whole like fae story category itself, right? How does this new understanding shape Lore's journey throughout the series? I love that, like, I think a lot of it from what my attention was given to was like her kind of like hero journey of like, she has good intentions, so she expects good intentions from other people. Mm-hmm. And then she's getting more and more time goes by and she's seeing that like people have very bad intentions from the start, especially the more power they have. So I wondered more of like, is this a story about power dynamics and stuff that is also tied to her journey?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say Lore's, the entire book is kind of about autonomy, having autonomy over yourself. And if you look at every character, they actually have like their own version of that story. And you, for some of them, if you're thinking like, well, I can't see it in this one, you'll see it in book two. But I will say that Lore, despite her hardship, always wants to see the best in people and always wants to believe that they'll make the right choice. And she unfortunately has to learn again and again that that's not always what's going to happen. And I will say that she struggles with that a lot in, you know, the coming books. And as the first book, you know, it's just, unfortunately, she loses a lot of her naivety. So I hope that answers the question.
It does. It's so funny too, because the way in which society is kind of set up and like the way that the humans are in Duskmere, it makes a lot of sense that there's a level of naivety. Never mind.
I will say that it's kind of more Lore's personality flaw as opposed to like the people of Duskmere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's just something that she's like always gonna have to struggle with.
Love BNT content? Want to see the tricks behind the treats? Every month we drop behind the scenes and bonus content on our Patreon. Baddies at any tier get access to notes, process videos, and podcast outtakes. Support us on Patreon at any tier by going to patreon.com/blacknerdscreate.
Here on Wizard Team, it's no surprise that we love books. We also love supporting the independent bookstores.
With our bookshop affiliate link, you can not only get all the books on your TBR, but you can support indie bookstores and BNC at the same time.
And if you're not sure what you want, that ain't no problem. Check out our The Plot Thickens list full of recommendations from none other than Portia herself.
Head to www.bookshop.org/shop/blacknerdscreate to treat your shelves.
Treat your shelves!
Oh, that's nice. That's clever.
Oh my goodness.
That's clever.
There is a lot of excitement and hype around this book. And I said earlier, I don't think it got recorded, but before we start recording that, like, I had so many people, you know, being like, Robin, this is coded. This is very Robin coded. This is like made for you. So I was like hyper aware of the book, and you know, had it on my TBR early. What is that like as a debut author to experience like that kind of buzz for something? How did you handle that?
I went through mixed emotions, and this may sound like wild, but I'm gonna get a little vulnerable here. When I was first going to publish my book, I was going to self-publish. So in my head, not that many people were gonna read it, because unless you're like one of the really, really rare self-published authors, usually your debut sells like maybe 600 copies. You know what I mean? And so I had kind of, like, I had hoped to sell 600 copies. I don't know why that number was like has been in my brain for years now. I actually wanted to get 600 pre-orders. Anyway, it was a whole thing. But I had already kind of like been like, okay, you know, I won't have, you know, I hope that my book can find its audience, and I hope that it can find people who needed this book, who wanted this book, and who can cherish it and love it. But I didn't really have too high of hopes because I had decided to self-publish. And then once my book got picked up and my cover reveal went like low-key viral, which actually happened first and then I got picked up, I suddenly like was looking at the Goodreads page and it was like 5,000 people want to read your book. And then it was like 10,000 people want to read your book. And then it was like 30,000 people want to read this book. And I was like, I literally messaged my friend and was like, I'm so scared. Like, you know what I mean? Because like, there's nothing worse than being so hyped for a book and then you read it and it lets you down. And the thing is that if you're not hyped for a book and you read it and you love it, it is like the best feeling because you're like, oh my God, I had never even heard of this book. And it just fell into my lap. And it was such an incredible story. But when all you hear is, I'm so excited for this book. And then you're going into it with massive expectations. It's way more of a chance of you not connecting with the story, I think. Like, at least that's personal. That's how it is for me. And so I always prefer the other. I try to always go into a book blind if I can. Like, I'm very fortunate enough that I can usually just buy a book if I want to and go into it blind, or I'll get it from the library, like on Libby, because I love Libby. And so I won't even look at the synopsis. Like, I'll be like, I like the cover. Two people told me it was good one time. Don't even remember who it was. And I'm going to just put it on hold. And if it comes in, I'll read it. You know what I mean? And that is how I like to fall in love with my stories. So whenever I saw that, oh my gosh, my book is being hyped and people are talking about it on Book Talk and they're sharing it on their Instagram stories and stuff, I will say I'm so grateful to every single person who did that, because you have absolutely made my dreams come true. But also it was scary at the same time. So it was definitely a mixed bag of emotions that was happening. And at the same time, I know that the more publicity it gets and the more people talk about it, the more people who have been craving a fantasy story where the people look like them will find it. And that is ultimately has always been my goal. So,
yeah. Also, shout out to the cover, because it is top tier.
Oh, okay. So my cover is one of my very favorite subjects. I will say that my cover designer, Jordan Ashby, killed it. Okay. And I'm going to tell you what happened. So I'm traditionally published. And so the fact that I had complete and total control over my cover is so rare, because how it works in the traditional world is you write a book and then the publisher buys it and then they go, oh, here's your cover. And sometimes you can be like, why are they white if I told you that they were brown? And then maybe they'll change it, but like maybe not. And so because I was originally indie publishing, I was in the market for a cover designer. And I messaged three different cover designers who I love, because I'm in the book world. So I follow so many artists and stuff like that. And they were like $2,000 more than my budget. So I was like, wow, thank you so much for getting back to me. maybe in 10 years, I can afford this. And I was just, I have ADHD, so I tend to hyperfocus. So what I was doing was I was hyper-focusing on my cover artist. And I would spend hours scrolling through DeviantArt and like just everything I could like try to find. I'm like, where do artists post their stuff? Like, I need to find somebody who's hopefully like maybe just starting out or something who I can afford, you know what I mean? But also who speaks to what I want, you know what I mean? Like their art style. And I'm on Instagram where I live because I'm chronically online. And I'm on Instagram and I saw this picture of who was it? It was Achilles and Patrocles. I don't know how to say that name.
It sounds about right.
Thank you. So it was him, and I've read the Song of Achilles, so I'm like, oh, I love them so much, you know. And I saw this art, and it was beautiful. And it was so beautiful. The greens were just like stunning, and you know, Patrocles was brown, and that made me so happy. And so I went to the Instagram page, and I saw these beautiful Black people on it, and I was like, oh my god. And I messaged him and was like, hi, do you do cover designs? And he was like, well, I never have before, but I would be interested. And I'm like, cool, give me a quote. I would need 3 people on the cover, you know, because they charge per person, you know. And mm-hmm. and so I let him I wanted half bodies, 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all I knew. And so we ended up working out. He was exactly in my budget, beautifully in my budget. And the best part about, I think that the reason why my cover is so amazing, and not just because he's so talented, but because he asked me, can I read your book? And I said, dude, my book is currently with my editor and I cannot do grammar. So you don't mind like 800,050 commas? Yeah. And like, I don't mind. So I sent him my book and he freaking read it. And he loved it. And he, the 3 people on the cover were my idea. I wanted Laura in the front. I knew I wanted Asher. I knew I wanted Thendril. I knew I wanted her holding a book. I knew I wanted them to be in a forest. But he was like, what if we have Asher having some of his magic coming out of his hand? You know, he has earth magic. So he has like a vine. And he's like, and what if we have the moon? And I'm like, what if we have the moon? Yes. Can we? Can you put the moon in there? That's such a good idea. And so between the two of us, we made magic. We made magic. And he sent me the first initial sketch and I just burst into tears because I've never seen my original characters drawn out. And this was like black and white, like a line art sketch. And I'm like crying. Okay. That's how good he is, first of all. And then every time he would just send me an update, I would just be like, well, now I'm crying again. And then I just couldn't, it just kept getting better. Like I never could imagine it would get better. And every time he would send me an update, it was better, which just blew my mind. And so, yeah, that was the story of my cover. And then my cover reveal went viral and I got an agent. And then 2 weeks later, my book went to auction. So it was insane.
I loved that, like your cover story in general, but I love that also by the time I got to the traditional publisher, they were like, the hype for this cover is like, or whatever decision making they did, but I'm sure the hype was part of it, was so much like
undeniable.
Possibly try to redo it.
Right. Because we were in talks and they were like, we are obsessed with your cover. So we want to keep it. And I was like, I'm obsessed with my cover. I would like to keep it. And it was just like, it's perfect. So it really worked out. Yay.
Awesome. And I'm sure like now he's getting all of these like, hey, do you want to do my cover? That's so cool.
Yeah, he is. He's like a shining star right now. I'm so proud of him. He's getting like cover work and he's telling me, you know, he just told me about some of the commissions he's gotten and I'm so proud of him. It's just like amazing stuff happening. So I'm like, you're big time now.
Success story. I love it.
Yeah. I love it. He's so young. He's like, I think he's 20 or 21. Ooh. He's like, I know. And he's so talented. I'm like, I can't even imagine what you'll be doing in 10 years. Like, I cannot even imagine by the time he's my age, like what his art will look like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be mind-blowing. So, I mean, it already is, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Speaking about looking into the future, what can we expect from you next?
Oh, this is so okay. So I,
if what you can say, what you're able to say, but also what you can't say, off record as well, if you would like to do that.
You're like, whatever we have to cut out, we cut out. I'm working on a really really fun fantasy right now, and I will say it's pretty dark, and I think it's gonna be a really I just think it's going to be, I don't know, I'm obsessed with it. And so hopefully that will be my project that comes next. But I also have 2 other ideas that are half written. that are really, really fun. One of them is like, one of them's like kind of like an epic fantasy. One of them's a just straight romantic standalone that I have an idea for. And I wrote like the first four chapters and I'm not working on that one yet though. I paused it to work on my other one that I'm working on. But I have multiple stories ready to go. They're not written, not all the way written, but I know the characters and I know the world. And I am working on one that has a pretty hard magic system. So it's, I'm doing a lot more world building for that because of this hard magic system. So it's definitely like stretching my mind, you know, right now. But I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. I love a good world building. I love magic systems that, like, I don't know. It's not that it takes you out of the story, but you're just like, I know that this author knows so much more. Like, I understand, you know, like, I know that this is there.
That's the best kind, though. When my favorite magic systems are the ones that, like, really come at a price. Like, if you're going to use magic, like, you have to cut your finger off to use it. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I love those ones that are like, oh my gosh, you know, I remember I read one book in middle school, it was a middle grade book. I believe it was Scott Westerfeld or maybe his wife.
Yes. Was that the Uglies?
No, so it wasn't Uglies. It was, okay, so it was Scott
Westerfeld. Was that the same author, though?
Same author. Yeah. And I hate to say that I don't remember her name. That's terrible, but I read this book literally in like eighth grade, I think. But that magic system was like, they could use magic, but the more magic they used, they lost their minds. And also if they didn't use magic, they lost their minds.
Was that The Darkest Circle? Like, did that have a movie with it?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I just remember hearing about a story that happened like that.
I haven't even thought about this in years, honestly. Yeah. But I remember that magic system, like, was so exciting to me because no matter what, it had a price, whether you used it or you didn't. So it just depended on, like, how fast you wanted to lose your mind because it was inevitable. Wow. Which sounds so dark. And it was middle grade. But it was really good. It was good. I'm going to have to look it up later.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking about Lore of the Wilds. Please let the folks know where they can find you and your work.
Please find me at Literary X Queen on Instagram or TikTok. Or Threads, which I'm loving right now. I'm kind of unhinged over there, but it's so fun. You can find my work anywhere you like to purchase your books and or rent them, like check them out from the library. And if your library doesn't have it, you can request it. And I will say that hopefully your local bookstore has it. And if not, I'm very proud to say you can find it at Target, which is my favorite thing ever. I always say support your local bookstore, but also it's in Target. How cool is that?
Target mentioned it during your like excitement and hype discussion, but like, was there any hype within like your family for like seeing your name in a book at Target or anything that happens?
Oh yeah. I've had my family like send me pictures of them. Like, that, even though they already had pre-ordered it from somewhere else, like, if they go to Target, they send me a picture of it. Like, if they go there, they're sending me a picture. And that makes me so happy because as somebody who multiple times I've lived in a town without a single bookstore, like, I would drive and I would be forced to shop at Target because that very limited section was where I could get my books if it wasn't online. You know, and sometimes you just need a book that day. You don't want to wait 2 days or a week, depending on where you're ordering it from.
Yeah. I'm a big like support your local library, and I think we talked about like I live on Libby, but there was a book recently that like I had put on hold before it even came out. Put it on hold. I went to check the like week it came out, and it was like 58 weeks. And I was like, you're joking.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes you need the book.
Right. And I will say that libraries are a huge part of Lore of the Wilds. And so anytime someone tells me, my hold is up at the library, I'm starting this tonight, it fills me with so much joy because it just feels like serendipitous. Like, you got the book in the library. It's about libraries. It's kind of like, you know, and as a child, I spent hours and hours and so many Saturdays at the library. Yes. That was where I went. I would ride my bike there. I was lived within biking distance. And I just devoured books. Not to mention, I was raised without a TV. I did not have a television in my house. My mom didn't think that like you needed one. She'd rather we be outside or we be reading. And so that is like a huge part of why I read. And so I would go to the library and leave with the max amount of books. Like if I could check out 15 books, I had 15 books. So libraries are a huge part of my history, and I will always say, please support your library, because that is a place that you can go and you don't have to spend any money and you can have a blast. And we need to be supporting that, because that's so important in our society where there's nowhere else that you can go that you don't have to spend money.
The optimum third place, as everyone's talking about the lack of third places, like, that is one that you can always support. I will say that, like, as someone who was also a library person, when I became an adult, it was like, oh, I'm looking at this apartment or whatever. How's, is it walkable? Is it this? How far is the library?
Yeah.
Exactly. Even if I never go, I just need to know that I can go and get there. So
yes, don't worry about proximity to like the things you need on a regular thing. Sure, sure, grocery store, all that. Sure, sure, fine. Library.
The way that same though, because same, and I love that we all like agree. We all know what we're talking about. That's so cool.
I mean, I live in San Diego. All of a sudden, one day, randomly, they were like, tropical storm watch or whatever, and I was like, they're like, you have to get sandbags, you might lose power. I was like, okay, well, first things first, let me jot down to the library so I'm prepared,
get my books. So I spent like my early years in Washington State, but I was raised mostly in Florida, so hurricanes and tropical storms were just, you happen all the time, so you made sure you had your books, like what books are you going to read? And then later when you got older, you made sure you had some wine too. And so, you know, that's just, that was my childhood and my college years was making sure I had books that I could read if I didn't have power for a week. So
like that has to be a challenge at some point. Like the, what is your book list? The stuck inside because of horrible weather, inclement weather challenge.
That's a fun question to ask.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one. I'm nodding along to all of that because I deeply agree, but also the specifically the like each time going to the library as a child, getting the exact limit of books, like having had like I made sure I finished all the books so I could come back and get the next allotment. And it was for me, it was like pre tote bag days. Like it wasn't, there weren't a lot of tote bags like that I had available. So it was a lot of just like holding books and still getting to the car and just being like,
oh. Marcia.
See, I would ride my bike. So I would have to play Tetris with my backpack to fit them all in so that I
could. Portia, do you think the library is where my tote bag thing came from?
Possibly. What happened first, the tote bags or the books?
Or the books. I have so many tote bags that I want to move to apartments just using tote bags instead of like boxes.
Boxes.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, I have a, I had a basket and then I gave some away because I was like, this is
obsessive
and weird. But like I had a cute little like basket.
If it brings you joy, then
I mean, it's like storage space.
The amount of books I have behind me, it's, some people would say that is
weird. No judgment. Like we are
not here.
People. We are. Yep.
I'm building my library.
I am also the person that like genuinely I'm an audiobook reader. I've gotten more and more. My eyesight's gotten worse. My ADHD. It's nice for me to be able to move. That does not stop me from buying the book.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah. I wish I could read more audiobooks, but unfortunately I work from home, so like I don't commute anymore. Mm. And my ADHD is like I have to be doing something if I'm doing audio. Otherwise I zone out. I miss like a whole chapter because I'm in my head. Probably thinking about some random girl in a library, even though I'm reading a sci-fi. And so, like, I only read probably like 3 a year. But I wish.
A thing that my friend did because I was on this like I need to start working out or moving more because I also work from home was like you can only listen to your audiobook while you're on a walk. I don't know if you're. I'm not really. Strict enough with myself to keep that, but it does really help. Like,
yeah, so it was like you would actually be like, oh, I want to know what happens next, so now I have to go on a walk.
I literally, when I was like, when I was reading,
a good tip, and I'm also trying to move my body more. So
I was listening to Legendborn. I've told this story before. I was listening to Legendborn, and the part where she goes on the first like memory walk, I was walking my dog, who at the time was like, I mean, she was recovered from spinal surgery, but she still like was like. In the like recovery, we shouldn't do too much kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, girl, we got at least 2 to 3 more blocks because I need to know what happened.
You, like, let her sit and you just walk in place or something at your front door.
We're marching on the grass.
Right.
I'm like, you smell every plant you want to smell. I need to know what's going on.
I love that. They say it's really, I learned from TikTok, which is where I learned everything about dogs since I don't know much about dogs. I'm allergic, but they say that, you know, 15 minutes of sniffing is like super good for them or something, like letting them go on a sniff walk where they leave. So that's fun.
Speaking of Legendborn, if you ever are inclined, we have been reading Legendborn. Like we did Legendborn, the first book last season of our podcast, and now we're going to pick it up again next season of our podcast. And we spent we devoted that whole like episode that we were talking, like we had the chapter where Laura is washing her hair, just talking about like demon blood in like natural curls and like the
impromptu wash days
at like dead and the dead of nights and how much like how tired you are. Like she was like already battling and tired and her body was drawn out and she's still washing her hair. So yeah, that if that's ever of interest, that we did devote a good amount of time just talking about that specifically, and it was very fun.
I love that. I'm like low-key obsessed with Legendborn. I have so many editions. And my goal in life is to have Tracy Dion read my book and lie to me about loving it if she doesn't. I'm like, please don't tell me.
Speak good words to me.
I'm like, did you like it a little bit? But she's like, I'm obsessed. I think that, like, I remember, like, reading Legendborn, and I've talked to people who said that they guessed the ending. I did not guess the ending. I was flabbergasted. I was running around my house. I made my husband sit down while I told him the entire plot and why I felt so good at the end. And I want that feeling again. I would love to be able to read it for the first time again. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It is. Okay. Now I have to get back into episode book. Thank you all for listening. Thanks again, Annalie, for joining us. And everyone, please join us on Wednesday for our next episode of Wizard Team, where we will be wrapping up our discussion of Amari and the Great Game by B.B. Alston.
Are we done?
By the time this episode airs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, look at that forward planning.
The future. Wizard Team is part of the Black Nerds Create Collective. If you want to keep up with our content, you can check us out at our website, blacknerdscreate.com. Follow us on Instagram and Tumblr at Wizard Team Pod and Black Nerds Create. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.